Hey everyone, welcome to this week's show, and we're a couple, almost 3 weeks into the new year here, which is very exciting. Hopefully you have gotten a little bit of footing for what's happening this month and looking ahead. Since we're talking about looking ahead, let's actually talk about looking back. We have got later on in the show, actually, where Dr. Carl Benzio is here to talk about someone struggling with OCD. So he's a psychiatrist, he's going to offer great insight into that, really, especially as it impacts relationships. And then for our culture segment, oh my word, you're going to flip out for our guest. Her name is Feyreen Clark Reese. She is hilarious. She is 81 years old, so she is out of our demographic, but she killed it. She was single until she was 77, y'all. And so for those of you who are 21, you know who you are. You have come up and told me that you never think you're going to get married because you're now the ripe old age of 21. You need to hear Feyreen's story because she is just fantastic about trusting God with life in singleness, as well as still being hopeful for marriage. And there's even a little twist to her story that you're going to want to hear. So that is coming up. Well, for our roundtable, I mentioned looking back, and we have got Darren, Sarah, and Christine here. Hey, y'all.
Hello.
Hi.
Okay, so back in February, that was a long time ago. It was almost a year ago. February of 2016, we'll link to the show here. We had you here to talk about something new going on in 2016. So either a life change or a decision you made, a goal you had, some kind of project you were doing. And we talked about kind of like what motivated you to make the change, how you were feeling about it at the time. And this is our little follow-up to see if, you know, whatever happened, basically. Like, was it legit? Are you still surviving? What's going on? So as a refresher, let's just go, you know, go down the line here and remind everyone what we talked about, what our little deal was. So Darren, you begin.
So I lived for a year on $7 a day, excluding rent, utilities, and things I split with my roommates, and insurance.
Wow. Okay. I feel like your jacket was more than $7. Did you get that recently or what?
I actually did get this recently because my friend's brother, his closet was being cleaned out by his parents.
Okay.
And so she snagged a couple of things that she thought would fit me. And so now I have this super fashionable jacket thing.
That's pretty fun.
This is
I do want to make this someday when we're a video show, you know, a video podcast. Was that a vodcast or what do they call it? Then this will be more legit. But I'm actually wearing a pair of UGG boots. The only reason I'm wearing them is my friend's father-in-law died and I got his boots because he was this little Hispanic man who was just precious and he and I have the same shoe size. So otherwise I would never buy these for myself. But I'm just saying I wanted to say that so I could be like Paris Hilton. But anyway, okay. So that's Darren. Okay, Sarah, what's up?
Sure. So I've just recently completed my first year of marriage.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And so living
<Just kidding.
laughs> so just transitioning into married life and to living with a boy, which is very different. And so or should I say man? I'm sorry. He's
you
a great man.
Man. Yeah.
You can probably fill the whole show, huh?
That's right.
Interesting. All right. And Christine?
I resigned from a rough situation in my job and started a new one. Mm-hmm. And it's been wonderful.
All right. Cool. All right. So what, think back, you guys have to think back to last February when you talked about this. What kind of, I mean, this was all relatively new for y'all. I need you to conjure up kind of where you were at that point in the situation. Like even, you can even go back further and just talk about, you know, refresh us as to when I first thought, you know, this was going to happen. And I mean, obviously some these decisions you don't just make lightly. And Sarah, you in particular, I'm sure yours was a while in the making. But Sarah actually had to fake an injury to meet her husband. So she claims it was real, but it's still being deliberated. Anyway, what were you thinking? Like, what were the fears? I mean, we all kind of fear or just kind of have a little trepidation around change or is this really going to work or what am I doing here? Am I going to be able to stick it out? That kind of thing. What were the thoughts going through your head at the time? It was very new.
Last year when I was walking in that tough job situation, I felt very clearly, I'm prior service, so that it was as though I was 20 miles into a road march with a 100-pound pack on my back. and just being told by God to keep going with bloody feet. And it was still scary, though, to just immediately step out of that with nothing arranged ahead of time. But that was what I felt like God then freed me from that situation. And he totally orchestrated everything and getting me into another job as my brother was about to be moving here with his family of six. And and he's blessed that job for me. I know I'm skipping ahead to what's going on this year, but
yeah,
no. I have felt so much this year that he has just really made that happen. I've had to pull my own weight from the start, and it's been tighter financially, but it's been, I can still see that his hand in it and that he is taking care of me because I obeyed last fall.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think we can say Christine's actually a doctor. And so this was like a public move. Like, you were switching practices, like your name is in the phone book. This wasn't just like slinking along to some back end desk job, something. I mean, you had to, a lot of people had questions, you know, and it really was hard. And you felt obligated to patients and to, you know, the system you were in and stuff. So, yeah.
And it was still very important to me to leave without dishonoring the other Christian practice. So that adds another layer of being obedient to God and not spreading bad information or negativity.
Sure. Yeah. Sarah, how about you?
Oh, well, I mean, of course, leading up to marriage, especially in Boundless and working for Focus on the Family, or of course, like, always promoting going through, you know, premarital, different programs, and whether it's Ready to Wed, the one that Focus actually created, or other premarital programs, you really feel like that you feel like pretty prepared to go into something. And I have to say, by the grace of God, like, this year has gone really well. And I, without it sounding cheesy, I just, you know, I really love being married. And I'm not sure if that's because I waited till I was nearly, you know, 30 to get married, which for most people seems like a longer time. But I think it has made me really appreciate being married so much more so. And just being, you know, the preparation that we did before the wedding has really allowed myself and my husband to approach different things, like whether just bumps in the road that have come along. Like, I think when we talked last, back in February, we just found out that we were robbed during our ceremony with all of our gifts. Mm-hmm. And then we got robbed again this summer. And so it was kind of like, oh man, the hits keep coming. But thankfully, just because of the preparation that we had beforehand, we were really able to kind of take a step back a lot of the time and think, okay, you know what? The Lord's in control. These things are not that fun, but at least we're in this together, and we've got an advocate who's the Lord, and he's on our side, and we're going to keep seeking him. Mm-hmm. So that's been really great. And it's been an adjustment, but not a bad adjustment. Like, I'm sure, like, when you're living with any type of roommate, you have to learn, you know, people have different quirks and habits and things that you get used to, or their surprises. But in that, it's just extending grace a lot of time. And I know that he's had to extend grace to me a lot. But I feel through, you know, just the things that I learned from Boundless or you know, working here at Focus, or, you know, for my friends and family, that it has made this year really great. And I can say that I know it sounds so lame, but I love being married. I love having a buddy. And so it's been a good year, despite some weird setbacks.
That's great.
It's been a good year.
Yeah. Okay, Darren, how about you? Because you kind of put it out there that you were going to do this challenge of living on $7 a day. And that could have easily, you know, I think for some people, there's a lot of great intentions. And then some people do that and say, I'm going to do this, or they feel peer pressure to do something awesome, and then they tank, you know, crash and burn pretty early on. But what were you thinking going into this? And, you know, right, maybe you were into it a little bit, actually, when we talked last, but feelings, you know, that early on.
I mean, early on, it was a lot of expectation of what God would do through that year, sort of thing. God's been great at showing his faithfulness to me in the past, as I've always tried to live pretty fiscally responsibly and generously and things like that. So a lot of expectation for seeing God work in the year. And so then you come to the end of the year and everyone comes up and they go, "Ah, what was your great revelation?" people in the breezeway actually just asked me that, because I talked to some friends from back here. And I told them I didn't really have huge revelations from God during this entire thing. God definitely showed his faithfulness throughout the entire thing, but there weren't huge example moments that I can put a finger on. Really, actually, this year was a lot of plateau and a lot of just perseverance in it. But also there's been some great times of God reassuring me that I was where he wanted me to be. Mm-hmm. One time I was at a Bible study and I was having trouble focusing on the worship, and I was just thinking about the day and how the year was going and things like that. And I very clearly had the thought from God that most of life is lived in a plateau. Usually we're not at a peak. Usually we're not, you know, in a valley. We're almost always at a plateau. And he's like, you just got to trust me in the plateaus just as much as in the valleys. Mm-hmm. And I think that's been the overarching message for this year, is God's going to be faithful and show his grace to you. But a lot of times it's just, we're here on this earth and it's a sinful place and some things are rough and you don't always feel mountaintop experience. You don't always feel super close to people, super close to God, but he's got you in the palm of his hand and he knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, that's a great point, because it reminds me of how, I say this a lot here at Boundless, how I think the way that technology has shaped us has made it seem like everyone except us is living mountaintops all the time. I mean, the way people report their lives on social media, the way we see the outliers who are doing awesome things out there, and of course they're blogging about it and whatever, and it can make us feel like, oh my word, I'm still in the same job for the fourth year or for whatever. And I feel like all I did was answer emails yesterday, because that's what I really did. And so it is, you can easily get into a comparison trap of like, oh, was that enough? Okay, let's talk about lessons learned. What were some of the big ones? Like, if you could put just where, I mean, you know, Darren, I want to know, like, what, first of all, what was easiest? What did you find out was easiest to live without, and what was hardest to live without as you kind of shifted your priorities and gave up some stuff? Sarah, I want to know, what was your biggest surprise, the hardest lesson to learn in marriage? Because, okay, it was amazing, but I'm sure some was hard too. Ask your hubster. and Christine, just how you've seen God show up in so many ways through the transition and taking that step of faith. So whoever wants to go first.
For me, the easiest thing to let go of was more of the entertainment side of things. I've never been big on eating out in restaurants or spending a bunch of money to, you know, go someplace fancy or anything like that. My version of a vacation is driving out to San Diego, sleeping on my friend's couch and surfing. So couch surfing and literal surfing. And so those things were pretty easy to cut out. I think the harder things came down to time with friends and sort of being in that awkward state where you have to say no to a lot of trips or day trips or even just normal things. And then you get into different things where friends go, oh, I'll just pay for you, and trying to navigate those, that whole water of things. So I have some really good friends who are awesome during this entire thing, and they definitely supported me without making it weird and without putting something on me that would have gone against my convictions, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
I think for me, just the adjustment from being independent beforehand and kind of having a way that you do everything, whether it's your laundry, the way you grocery shop, meal plan, anything like that, to then having to kind of change your mind to think about somebody else before yourself. And so it's basically trying to consider somebody else's opinion and take that into account when you're making a decision. It's so easy when I was single to be like, well, I earn my money so I can spend it on whatever I want. But now it's our money, so we wanted to make decisions together. And respecting, you know, when my husband asks for, let's keep a budget, like, please feel free to spend money because we both earn it. But let's also, you know, try to stay within this area. So that was just an adjustment, you know, for all my life doing whatever I wanted, when I wanted. but to now thinking of someone else first. And in, at first it was a little difficult, but at the same time it's worth it, mm-hmm. because I want to respect my husband, but also I want to grow in something together. And mm-hmm. so it's been a great learning opportunity. Things mm-hmm. are not always super rosy, but what I love about it is that we're always a team on things.
Yeah.
And we'll talk things through and try to come to a win-win situation.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And didn't you, like, when you were single, didn't you take, like, really long runs in the morning? Do you still do that? Or
I do. Yeah, I still, so I do love to run, and so I'll get up really early in the morning, and it's a great time for praying or listening to sermons. And my husband, he's a firefighter, so he has a weird schedule anyway. Mm-hmm. So he's gone up almost 3 days out of the week, so he's gone up quite a bit. So I still,
you know, can fit it in.
I can fit it in, and it helps me have a positive attitude.
That is great.
Those endorphins. It's great.
All right, Christine, lessons learned.
So for me this year, it's been a story of work is now smooth and sweet. And so, of course, God's picked something else to be trying to sanctify in uh-huh. me. And I'm so grateful for that. And that has been a sweet thing. But as the rest of my life has been easier, it's more blaringly obvious that my singleness. And so I feel like it's been a time of that God has kind of taken me out to the desert and that he is romancing me. And I feel silly saying that, but it's been really sweet. And there's been some times where I've kind of been struggling against the role that he has for me for now. And in the sense of I'd rather be a Ruth, but I'm more of a Lydia in my church. And I can remember times of physically thinking, Lord, just, I don't want this, and kind of mm-hmm. struggling against that. And he's been so sweet.
Explain the difference between a Ruth and a Lydia, just to okay. make sure people know.
So Ruth
got her Boaz.
Okay. Yes, she got her Boaz. She was redeemed. Uh-huh. And Lydia was the essentially single person in her church that was wealthy, and she opened her home and welcomed people and served them and provided for people.
Businesswoman.
Yeah. So it's been sweet to hear God remind me of the covenant that he used to be our God and we're to be his people. And in that, we're to obey. Mm-hmm. And so I've felt this sweet message of, no, Christine, you obey mm-hmm. and you focus on me because I'm your Redeemer. And you just obey and you be patient. And you learn meekness, and you keep doing what I'm asking you to do for now.
Christine and I are in a Bible study together where we're learning meekness.
That's hard.
Some of us better than others, probably. it is hard. But also, hopefully I'm not stepping out of turn in saying, Christine shared recently, too, she had a friend go through cancer and pass away. And just walking through hardship with other people, too, while you're learning your own lessons that God is teaching you about leaning on him is a hard thing to, and feeling like, oh, now I have to be the strong person for that. We're you know, struggling with always being the strong person in situations and stuff like that. So, well, let's talk just for a couple minutes here before we wrap about the coming year. So, Darren, I want you to share a little bit. Don't you love it how I just tell you guys exactly what I want you to say?
No,
I'm gonna leave this open, but I do want you to share because you talked about you were doing this for a cause, mm-hmm. and what I mean, money that you did you work out any kind of estimate about what the value was of this? I mean, did you do anything practically funds wise as far as finishing out the year?
Yeah, so each month I actually gave the money that I didn't spend. So essentially my entire paycheck, which is going to make it interesting when the IRS calls, to a different organization each month. So like in October, on 1 month's salary, I was able to sponsor a Compassion International child for 7 years.
Wow.
Which is pretty amazing.
Huh.
I donated 2,314 years worth of fresh water through Charity Water.
Wow, that's great.
There's like 141 families fed through Samaritan's Purse. The Exodus Road has a cool thing where they estimate it's $3,000 to do a brothel raid because they're an anti-human trafficking organization. Mm-hmm. And they say if they catch one pimp, they estimate that that's 200 girls saved into the future.
Wow.
So that comes out to $15 a girl. And so I actually donated to them multiple times over this thing. And so there's over like 600, 700 girls saved into the future, you know, under that estimation, which isn't even including girls that they catch at the actual places. So Bibles into hostile countries through VOM, lawyers' time through IJM. So a lot of...
International justice.
Yeah, international justice mission, sorry. There's a lot of countries that don't have like property law or laws about... or laws that are enforced about human trafficking and different things like that. So setting up or getting people the justice that they deserve. It's really cool that for 1 month of my time, I can fund two local lawyer months, essentially. So just a bunch of stuff like that. Malaria nets, gospel presentations.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Okay, you guys, so what's next? We're now in a new year. We're about a month, you know, a little over a month in. What are you looking at? Do you sense like what God's going to do in this year as kind of he's shaping you? Or are you just kind of awaiting what's next? Or do you have plans? What does it look like?
Sure. Well, my husband, I think I mentioned earlier that he's a firefighter and he started medic school. So he's gone for about 9 months. And so it's kind of like going back into a season of singleness for me. And during this time, I have joined a women's Bible study, which is great to kind of get back in the Word. And I took a little time off just to spend on our marriage, but really to use this time of being basically single again, just really to seek the Lord, like you were saying. It's just a time, a sweet time of me and the Lord working on my heart, and just in ways that I can better support my husband and hopefully just to grow closer to him.
Awesome.
I'm sorry. I can't help but laugh because I think, well, God's just going to see how I've been obedient with my work and with my social life and with my community and people he puts in my life. So he's just going to give me a husband this year, and that's going to be awesome. But no, sorry, it just makes me laugh to think about.
So
he may, but that's not what he's called me to do. He says, so I had a sweet talk with my dad over Thanksgiving, and it's getting up each day. And no, I don't know what the year's going to hold. It's that, okay, what's next, God? Where do you have me today? And what are you giving me to do today? So the the other answer was more of a joke.
Yeah.
But that's great. Okay, God, if you want to do that.
Yeah. But that's a good lesson, because you are, as a Lydia, you're a person that can easily plan out a lot of life, and you have resources to say, oh, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that and stuff. But God's saying, nope, I'm going to keep you depending on me. So there you have it. How about you, Darren? What's next?
I think first of all, making sure that the devil doesn't jump in and cause me to just go off the deep end as far as spending money, which is a real concern sometimes. But I'm launching an app. We actually just pushed out to the Apple and Google Play stores a little bit ago, so that's going to eat up a lot of my time. It's a startup I've been working on for like 2 years. I would also love if I had a girlfriend in my future, but
yay,
ladies.
Well, she's going to come. She was waiting for your year to be up.
There, that's it. That's it. Yeah, so there's a bunch of stuff that I'm looking forward to this year.
Super cool. Well, you guys, this has been fun. It's been a great update, and we'll just trust that the Lord continues to work in each of your lives. I know he will, and so I think it's really encouraging on all these different fronts for our audience to see that, you know, God is there, and we don't know even where he is down the road in front of us or what he has planned for us, but it's always good. It's not always easy, but it's always good. So thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
This world is a thief, walking the streets, trying to steal my hope, steal my dreams, dressed up in disguise, whispering lies so sweet. I don't wanna go one more day watching you take all the good things in this life the good Lord gave. I'm taking
Well, everyone, this culture segment is kind of a fun one because I have the privilege of introducing you to a new friend. And it's someone that you're probably not going to expect here on The Boundless Show because we're going to be talking to Faerene Clark Reese. And she's not quite, I'm going to be honest, she's not quite in our demographic here at Boundless. But, you know, I don't care about that. That doesn't matter to me because when I find fabulous people, I say we have to introduce them to our Boundless friends. So, Faerene, welcome to the Boundless Show.
Thank you, Lisa.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, well, I want you to tell our audience straight off the bat, we're in a new year now, and we're going to be, we have a lot of people in our audience who are wondering, okay, what is this new year, 2017, going to hold for me? What does it look like? Can I really trust God? Especially, we talk a lot about dating and relationships and marriage here at Boundless, and you have quite a little bit of a story to tell, because you were single for a long time. And when I say a long time, I mean a long time. So I want you to say you were single until the age of what?
77.
77 years old. And you're how old now?
I'll be 81 the 28th of this month.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Okay. So 77. Now, that is quite a story. And we had, we had found you through, of course, now with the interwebs, you can just find people and figure out what their stories are, which is fabulous. So I want to kind of kick this off by saying, because we're going to talk a little bit about how this unfolded for you and kind of what came about. But why would you say, let's just address this right off the bat. Why didn't you get married earlier in your life? Had you planned to, or was this something where you had other priorities, or kind of how did that play out?
Well, it wasn't for lack of wanting to, I assure you. I wanted always to be married and have babies.
Aww.
And it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
I was raised in church. I accepted Christ as my Savior when I was 5 years old. And I wanted to do what was right. I wanted to serve the Lord. I didn't quite know how I was going to do that, but I just thought that I would become a preacher's wife, and I'd be willing to take care of him, iron his shirts, cook his dinner, shake hands with people, teach a Sunday school class, and that was what was going to happen. That was my dream, and so I went to Bible college hoping to find a preacher,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't find one, and he didn't find me. And
I didn't find one either. I went to a Christian school looking for someone, and I paid a lot of money and didn't come out with one. Yeah.
No, and I finally decided, I'm kind of a practical person, and I finally decided that I'd probably have to make a living for myself. So I left Bible college and transferred to Arizona State University. And got a master's degree in education and taught in public schools. I didn't know how to know the will of God. And I liked teaching, and I did a good job at it. But there was always this disappointment way down deep inside me, feeling like I had somehow missed the plan of God. And I was lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And I fussed at God about it. I said, you know what? Everybody gets married but me, the ugly ones, the fat ones, the dumb ones, everybody but me. And, I don't know if he was, I guess he wasn't listening. I don't know. I guess he really was, but he wasn't answering. And so finally, after a really roundabout route, I found out what God's will for me was. He wanted me in full-time ministry.
Hmm.
So I decided to quit grieving and get on with my life.
Yeah. Yeah, and you kind of describe yourself as an eternal optimist who decided to kind of take where God had put her and really, move forward with his will in your life.
That's exactly... Well, I call myself the optimistic octogenarian now, so but that's exactly what I did. Eventually, God called me to the mission field, and I served in Europe, living in Belgium for a number of years. And sometimes I would get news from home about my district, and about this preacher's wife who had died and that preacher's wife who had died, and I used to think, oh, I like him. He's my age. Maybe I can get home in time to snag him. But, you know, I discovered that these guys marry again before the body's cold. So I never made it. But I, you know, I was happy in my work. I really was. The man that I married at the age of 77 was a man that I had known for over 20 years. In fact, I had served on the pastoral staff where he was on the board. Mm-hmm. At that time, he had a perfectly good wife, and she and I were friends.
Yeah.
And I retired in 2010, I guess it was, and came back to Arizona to live because my sisters are here. And I didn't even know that his wife had died until shortly before time for me. I was scheduled to preach a seniors camp in Northern California, and someone called and said, did you know Peggy died? And I said, no. So when I got to that part of the country, I called Cecil to see what had happened. And he said, well, have you had dinner? And I said, no. So he came and got me. And that was the beginning. It was, he was an old friend, mm-hmm. which I think was really in our favor. You know, we already knew each other. We were already comfortable with each other. But I had no thought about marrying at that age.
Yeah. Well, because he had been married for over 50 years, right?
57 years he had been married, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, and she had not been gone that long, but
yeah.
He asked me one night, he said, how do you handle the loneliness?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, Cecil, I've always been alone. Mm-hmm. I said, listen, you get yourself a snazzy little car and some new clothes, and you'll have more women swarming over you than you know what to do with. And he said, well, let's see how this works. And it scared me to death. I just got this big knot. I had learned to be independent. I learned how to be alone. I did a good job at it. And the thought of giving up my independence scared the life out of me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think this is great because, first of all, I know you guys met, you gave him a chance. I mean, you were very honest about, you know, upfront about, you know, because you'd probably, at 77, you weren't like, oh, I'm going to have all these chances to get married at this point.
No.
I mean, you.
No, I had totally given. I quit thinking about that.
Even with the bodies not yet cold in the grave, you still had to, you know, your chances were still kind of questionable. Okay, so yeah. I love this because check out your timeline. In September, you were dating. In November, he proposed. In December, you were married. You didn't waste any.
No, we were married in February.
Oh, February. Okay, you gave it a couple more months. Okay.
I wish we'd have done it in December.
Yeah.
We'd have had more time, you know.
Yeah.
But,
well.
Yeah.
And so, Feyreen, I want you to kind of turn a corner and tell this because, I mean, okay, so anyone listening is going to say, the Lord made Feyreen wait until she was 77, and she is a great example of God, you know, of trusting God with a timeline that's unknown, and God's going to bless that, and you were faithful in ministry and in missions, and then you marry Cecil, and tell us what happened.
Well, we had a blast, you know.
We went to Maui.
We did. We went to Maui for our honeymoon.
Uh-huh.
It was wonderful. I mean, it was, you know, it was something beyond my imagination and anything I had experienced, and he was just fun to be with, and he loved to make me laugh, and so we had a great time. Then we came back to Lodi in Northern California, and he had already sold his home and was living in a small apartment, but he was willing to come here to Arizona and live in my home, became our home. Mm-hmm. And we came back to Mesa and just settled in and got involved in church, and he sang in the choir, and we just had a great, you know, it was wonderful to me to be a couple.
Mm-hmm.
I always looked at couples and thought how wonderful it was to have somebody to hold hands with, and you know, and so, I mean, that was old hat to him, but to me it was a wonderful thing. And we made a lot. He made friends everywhere he went. That's the kind of man he was.
Mm-hmm.
And then on June 1st, we were married a little over 3 months, And on June 1st, he went to run errands, and he was gone longer than I expected. And I told him once, I said, you know, you're looking at a gal that's never been afraid of anything, and all of a sudden I'm afraid every time you're 3 minutes late that something's happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
But he came home that day, and his shirt was wet with perspiration, and he said to me, I think I'm having a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
He had stopped to get his hair cut, and he had this terrible pain in his back, so he decided to come on home. So I called the paramedics, put him to bed, and called the paramedics. They came. They did all kinds of tests on his heart, and they said, there's nothing wrong with his heart, and he doesn't want to go to the hospital. So they had him sign a release, and he said he felt better. But when I went, they left. They said, you can call again anytime you want to. When I went into the bedroom to check on him, he was up and he was dressed, and he said, I think we need to go to emergency.
Hmm.
So I took him, and they did an MRI, and the emergency room doctor came back and said, you have a tear in your aorta, and we have to do emergency surgery immediately. So they had called the surgical team together, and then she came back, the doctor, and said, we're not going to do the surgery. The surgeon says that he will not do it because of your age. Cecil was 80 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He'd never been sick a day in his life. He was very active. He loved to swim. She said, the surgeon says that everyone he's ever done surgery on at your age has either died on the table or shortly after, so he refuses to do it. And I said, well, that's not fair. Well, you know, what are our options? And she said, well, we'll admit him, and he will probably die here in the hospital.
Hmm.
Well, you know, I mean, I can't describe how I felt. I just, you can't believe something like that. So I determined that wasn't going to happen. I said, I'm praying, and God's going to work a miracle. And I clung to that through the whole ordeal. They slowed his heart down so as not to put any pressure on that aorta. The surgeon came to us the next morning and said, after talking to you and seeing you, we will do the surgery. But he said, you don't have even a 50% chance. And Cecil decided not to do it.
Hmm.
And so the doctor said, well, come and see me in a few days if you change your mind. Well, when Cecil got home and discovered he could hardly walk across the floor because he was so weak from that slowed-down heart, he changed his mind. But by then, they had to put the surgery off for 3 weeks. And before that, he had another episode, and they really did decide then that they wouldn't do the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So
you said,
stayed.
So this took you into July at this point. And what happened?
It took us into July. They sent him to hospice for a week, well, till he died. They were telling me every day he was going to die. I stayed there with him 24 hours a day. They tried to get me to go home, and I said, no, you say he's dying. If he dies, I'm going to be here. And finally, they gave up on him. He refused to die for them, and so they sent him home. And he just got up and dressed and put on his cocky little hat and took my hand, and we walked out to the car, and we came home. And he was here for 4 weeks.
Hmm.
And hospice came in and out and occasionally to check his vitals. That's all they did. And they sent me home with liquid morphine, because they said when that aorta ruptured that his pain would be unbearable, and I was to give him that. On Saturday afternoon, the 20th, that morning he woke up and said, do we have any cream of wheat? And I said, no, but I'll go to the store and get some. And I ran to the store real quick and came back and made him some cream of wheat and sliced some apples. And he took two or three bites, and I could tell that he was so weary. And he said, I'll have to eat this in shifts, and he went to lie down. And then he called me, and he said, I could use a pain pill. And I know that sometimes he asked for that because it helped him sleep. And I took it to him, and he looked up at me, and he said, I'm going to take this pill, and I'm going to lie down and go to sleep, and I'm not going to wake up. And you know what, Lisa, I heard that loudly and clearly, but it just didn't register. Mm-hmm. And I sort of joked with him and said, well, you better wake up. What do you think I'm going to do if you don't wake up? Mm-hmm. And I went to sit on the sofa. The door was open. I wasn't 20 feet away. Well, before that, actually, he reached up and put his arms around me and kissed me, and he said, I love you. Thank you for all you've done for me. Mm. And then he laid down, and I covered him up and kissed him again and came and sat down not knowing what to do. And in about 10 minutes, I heard this terrible snoring sound, and I went running into the bedroom, and he was taking one big breath, and then he took another, and then he was gone. Hmm. And I patted him on the cheeks and called his name and called his name, and finally I closed his eyes and crawled in bed with him and held his hand and told him how much I loved him, because I was afraid that he didn't really know that. And then he was gone. Hmm. And the next 2 years, I just tried to dig myself out of that pit that I was in.
Yeah. Well, you know, and how, because Farine, at this point, you'd been married only 5 months after 77 years of being single.
Yeah, 5 months, yeah.
So what, I mean, I know that you talked a little bit about, you know, when you and I were talking, just about the whole why of this. And one thing that you learned being, you know, that you don't necessarily know why, but it's okay to ask, because even Jesus asked the Father why.
Yeah, exactly.
How'd you walk through that questioning of asking God why in the wake of that?
Well, you know, I promised Cecil that I would not, that if this was God's time to take him, that I wouldn't rant and rail against God, and I didn't. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't figure it out either. I thought, you know, I told Cecil at our wedding that all those years ago, I thought God had said no when I wanted to marry, but he had only said wait. And I waited all those years, and I wanted to say to God, and I did say to him, you know what, I was doing fine on my own. I figured out how to be alone and to be happy and contented. I was doing all right. Why did you interfere in my life? Mm-hmm. Why didn't you just leave me alone? Hmm. You know? But, you know, I've walked with, Lisa, I don't know how to explain it, but I've walked with God for 75 years, 76 years. Mm-hmm. And I know God, and knowing God, whether I like what he did or not, I have to trust him.
Yeah.
Because he's never failed me.
Yeah.
Never, ever. I've failed him lots of times, believe me, but he has never failed me. And so I did, you know, Cecil brought the Bible to the breakfast table every morning, and we read and prayed together. And for everybody who's listening, if you ever get married, then that's a wonderful, wonderful practice that'll get your marriage off on the right ground. And so when he was gone, I did what I had done before he left me. I came and sat in the recliner in my office every morning and opened my Bible and read and tried to pray. My prayer consisted mostly of, oh, God, I need you. And I cried a ton of, I don't know, of tears every day. Hmm. But that's what began to bring me up and out of things. And I just stayed faithful to the word. I went to church. I hadn't been to church for 7 weeks while he was ill. And I went back the day after he died. It was very hard for me, but I went to church. I read my Bible. I prayed. And gradually, over a period of time, I remember the morning that I woke up and knew that things were going to be better.
Yeah.
And I made myself get out of bed and go to women's Bible study. I never even had been to the women's Bible study before. I knew that I needed to go, that if I just stayed in bed with a sheet over my head, that I'd never get well. And, you know, finally, I think the thing that I hated most about that travel or that journey through grief was people asking me, how are you doing, Faye? I wanted to say to them, well, how do you think I'm doing? I just, you know, and what I could see it in their eyes. They wanted me to say, oh, I'm fine. I'm just fine, you know, and they wanted me, because I'm kind of crazy and laughing and joking a lot, and that's what they missed. Mm-hmm. And if I said, I'm okay, I could see their disappointment, and I just said, I don't want anybody else to ask me that. But it was just the healing that comes from trust in God that did it, and I'm my old self again. Of course I think about Cecil, and I'm still mad at him for leaving, you know.
Well, I think that sounds like that's a good plan. Stay, you know, you can work that out with him when you see him in heaven.
Yeah, yeah. I'm also jealous. You know, he used to talk about his wife, and because she'd been my friend, he said, aren't you jealous? I said, no. I said, she's my friend, and she's gone, and I've got you, and I'm not jealous. But then after he was gone, I got to thinking one day, he's up there, and she's up there, and I'm down here, and all of a sudden I was jealous.
Aww.
So.
Well, I think it's so interesting because you also said, hearkening back, I mean, obviously you had to trust the Lord right where you were in the loss of Cecil and the disappointed hopes there. But you also made a comment previously that when you were young and were leaving to be a missionary, I think it was your mom that said to you, now you'll always be alone. And
yeah,
I know
exactly.
there are a lot of parents that struggle with that for their kids, and a lot of singles who fear ministry or missions because, well, what am I going to have to give up? Am I going to give up a dream? Is God really going to be there for me? Is he going to meet my needs? Can I really trust him? It's almost like it came full circle for you because you had to trust God with loneliness back when you were young, faced with that story, and then trusting him now where you are.
Exactly.
What would you say, Faerine, in light of that, what would be your encouragement to single young adults who maybe are just saying right now, okay, you know, it looks like Faerine did it, but I don't know if I have her faith, and I don't have 81 years under my belt, and I don't know, is God going to be good to me too? What assurance can you give us, Faerine?
Well, you know, I believe this with all my heart, and it's not just a placebo, but if you love God and you truly want to live for him, you truly want to serve him in whatever capacity he has planned for you, then you can trust him with your life, either as a single or as a married person. He's not going to play any tricks on you. And if you're seeking the will of God, you may have to indeed give up some dreams. I don't know. You know, I read in the Word where there were people who were always single, and I didn't want to think about that, but I thought that that's the way I would be. But I think you can trust God for every step in your life. And you may have to give up a dream, but God will always have. I'm not talking necessarily about the dream of marriage, but any other dream that you have in order to follow the will of God. But I believe that he will be faithful to you, and he will make up any lack that you have in your life. I don't know any other answer than just to take it step by step, day by day. Mm-hmm. Receive your strength from the Word, from your fellowship with the Lord, and from your friends, and let God do what God will do in your life. He will not fail you.
Yeah. So what, Faerine, as we finish up here, what's ahead for you? Because I'm guessing from talking to you that you're not just hanging up your hat and are going to sit down and knit all day.
Not ever. Well, I'm teaching in the church where I go now. I'm actually teaching an adult class, the Book of Daniel, on Sunday mornings, and that's been a real challenge to me. But I still have a yearning in my heart for ministry out there and beyond where I live. I've had a desire for many years to be a published writer, and I've done some writing, but I've had some pretty hard realities thrown at me that publishers no longer accept unknown writers, and I wondered what happened with Hemingway and and people like that, because surely they were unknown at one time. Mm-hmm. But you have to have what's called a platform these days, mm-hmm. which means that they expect you to already have a following before they will publish you. And so I became a blogger at the age of 80 last spring. I thought I was nuts, and I thought I'd never do such a thing, but I thought it might be a way of enlarging my audience, and it's still not really great. I mean, I have a friend who hers went viral, and she has like 77,000 readers or something. I'm never going to get to that, but I have enjoyed blogging very much, and I've just taken experiences from my childhood, from my ministry, from my life now, from my time with Cecil, and write a blog each week with a spiritual application to it.
Yeah.
And I'd love to give my blog address to you, and maybe your listeners would like to read it. And
well, Feyreen, you just talked about your blog, and I want folks to know, actually, you have a website, Feyreen,
yes.
Feyreene, Clark Reese, and that's Reese.com.
Yes.
And folks can find out all about you there. So all the listeners now that want to be your best friend, just like I do, you guys have to go to her website and find her blog, start finding out what Feyreen is up to, because you are just an absolute delight, Feyreen.
When you have a chance,
you need to come out and visit us here at the Boundless Show. We would love
to. I would love to.
We're just right north of you. You just come on up out of Arizona. You just come on up sometime.
I know.
We would love it. I'm going to be jealous. First of all, you need to be open that if God brings another man into your life, you can't just turn him down. Of course, then
no,
I'll be jealous.
People think I'm nuts, and I don't say this to everybody, but I loved my time with Cecil. I mean, it broke my heart to lose him, but I loved being married. I loved being a couple, and I would do it again.
Yeah.
At this age, I would do it again.
Yeah.
If the right man came along, I wouldn't do it with just anybody. But Cecil wasn't just anybody. He loved the Lord, and we just meshed together so beautifully. So.
Well,
if I find another one, I'll let you know.
You and me, I need you to find two. One for me,
well,
too.
What age does the second one need to be?
I don't know. At this point, I'm widening the net, you don't worry about it. Yep, you just let me know who you find.
Okay.
So
I'll do that.
All right. Well, you are just a blessing, friend, and we'll be in touch. Thank you so much for sharing a bit of your heart today.
Lisa. Thank you, and thank you to all the listeners.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, hey, everyone, as we finish up our inbox, and I'm very excited to have Dr. Carl Benzio with us here. Hey, Dr. Carl.
Hey, great to be with you guys, Lisa.
Awesome to have you. He's with our Physicians Resource Council and is a psychiatrist. And we have a question, actually, from someone struggling with OCD and wanting to know about dating. So that's kind of two separate prongs to this question. She says, I'm a 21-year-old, vivacious, friendly Christian girl. However, when I was a teenager, I began to struggle with obsessive-compulsive disorder, OCD. On a good day, I'm fairly close to what I used to be like before. On a bad day, it's hard to get myself out the front door. I plan to seek treatment, but time, money, and difficulty finding the right psychologist have hindered my efforts. Dating and marriage are very important to me. I'm not sure how I can pursue, or rather be pursued, with this kind of struggle. Should I avoid dating until after I'm able to get treatment? If not, when would be the appropriate time for me to tell a potential suitor about having a mental illness, especially one that's so debilitating? Aside from dating, what should my prayer be during this? Regardless of my circumstance, I know that God is sovereign and is my main source of strength, but godly counsel is appreciated.
Wow, that's a lot. Okay. So OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, is an anxiety disorder with obsessions and compulsions. And these are our defenses that we develop to cope with stress or to lessen adversity. For OCD, we often think that having power or control will give us peace or avoid having hurt. But obsessions, and common ones can be obsessions about germs, order, neatness, dying, even obsessing about am I saved or not. And then compulsions are those sort of behavioral things we do to relieve the obsession. So common ones are washing hands, counting, checking homework, checking bills, checking stoves, praying or confessing. And as you can imagine, these things can take up a lot of mind space and usually take up more than an hour of time in order to qualify for the diagnosis of OCD. So treatment is very important for OCD. First of all, medications can be helpful in decreasing the symptoms. I once had a lady who took a 20-hour shower. Once a week. And with medication, we were able to get her down to a 45-minute shower that she took. So medications are real important, but then it's working on those psycho-spiritual skills to manage the obsessions and the compulsions, and then look at the underlying control issues usually to figure out, well, how do we put this fire out altogether so no more fires start? Now, her question about relationships and dating, she sounds like a very caring, sensitive, insightful person. That's fantastic. But she's right. OCD does interfere with relationships and can interfere in significant ways. Waiting till we find the perfect person or we're perfect is, you know, that's unrealistic. But also dating somebody when OCD is significantly controlling your life isn't going to be healthy for you or the other person as well. We're looking for to enter into a relationship with somebody that, you know, God has designed for us to sort of be that complement for our struggles and our strengths, and we can complement their struggles and strengths. Oftentimes, whenever we make that vow of better for worse, it's great in the beginning, but later on it sort of wanes in the process. So talking about relationships then, we're built for relationship. Relationships are enjoyable. But marriage and dating especially can really highlight our weaknesses, can really bring out our psychological difficulties, our me-centeredness, our selfishness, and highlight our difficulty in compromising or being empathic or being willing to really love somebody and put somebody else first. So we want to be able to have control over some of our psychological stuff. Ideally, we're psychologically and emotionally independent and spiritually dependent on God when we enter into marriage, and we're marrying somebody else who is sort of has that same psychological and emotional independence. But most of the time, we have two broken people entering into a relationship. So trying to figure out, well, how do you start communicating about some of those things before the relationship starts moving forward? And, you know, ideally, we're making friends, we're connecting with people, and the person that we're dating is somebody that we're already friends with. And when you're engaging in a relationship, ideally the first step is to start to know somebody. And as we know them a little bit more, we start to trust. As we trust them more, we start to rely on them. And as we rely on them, we start to commit. And so dating to me is where we start to commit some elements to a relationship. I'm committing to you for certain, in a certain agreement or contract, whether going steady or obviously marriage is ultimate commitment in the process. So as we know, we start to trust and rely. As we start to trust, we need to start to share information. And that's when we can start to have that discussion of what are some of those symptoms, what are some of our psychological struggles, our emotional difficulties, and how they impact our life. And as we start to share those, we see, well, what is their reaction? Can I trust them more? Can I start to rely on them more? Can I start to commit to them more? You know, if they're able to hold those things well and be trustworthy with those and engage and be helpful partners in that, then great. We can continue to move forward with that relationship. If they really struggle with being trustworthy, being empathic, being a good listener, being a practice partner and some of the things we're looking to practice to grow our skills, then it's probably not the relationship that we should be involved in or investing in the process. We don't want to give too much information TMI right off the bat. But we also don't want to hold off too long and invest a lot of time and energy in a relationship if this is something that's a deal breaker. You know, sharing with them the psychological struggles isn't a litmus test to determine are they a good person or a bad person or a caring person or a nice person. It's just data that we need to have and they need to have on the table to consider, is this relationship within my chemistry to be able to move forward? Is there enough for that? As we look to tell somebody then about these things, we want to do it when they're receptive, when they're open, when we're calm, when we're able to talk clearly about something. We don't want to be frantic or agitated or be in a fight with them and say, here, I want to tell you about this real personal difficult stuff. We want to have it as a nice, calm, sensitive conversation where we're both open to listening and problem solving in the process. You know, as far as what to pray for, you know, to me, confession is a big thing. We want the Holy Spirit on the throne of our heart as we're trying to both understand and work on our own psychological struggles, as well as, well, when do we allow other people to enter in and commit to them and they commit to us as we work on this. We want the Holy Spirit's guidance in that. We want to thank God and be grateful, you know, for even the psychological struggles that we have, that, you know, he's blessed us in so many ways and is sovereign. And we just want to have that attitude of gratitude in the process. And just to pray for an understanding that he's in control. I don't have to be in control. Remember, OCD is where we want to have control of things, and to thank God that he's in control and to show us that we don't have to be in control. He's much better at controlling things than we are, and to allow things to be in his hands, and to give us insights into our psychological struggles and how we can start to walk forward and have the courage to practice, you know, what he wants us to practice, both within ourselves and with the people that he puts in our lives, especially if that's a significant other or somebody that we're dating.
All right. Well, that's Dr. Carl Benzio. He's a psychiatrist and part of our Physicians Resource Council. Thanks, Dr. Carl.
Hey, great.
All right, folks, that's it for this week's show. Do tell your friends and pop over to iTunes when you get a chance and review the show. Leave us a review if you would. That's how other folks learn about the show and can get to know us as well. We will see you around next week. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.